Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Feeling very energized today as we are broadcasting the Parkins and Spiegel Show live from Stadium Swim at Circa Resort and Casino.
The sun is out. Several people's guns are out.
The show is really just getting in the way of my weekend.
The Prince of Circa?
He might be the Prince of Circa and Stadium Swim.
Danny, I think he's like the greeter. He's the old school casino greeter. He's the Mickey Mantle of Circa.
Cody Decker, what's up, Deck?
Oh, man, I'm just living the dream, man. I'm over here at Circa. I'm wearing sunglasses. I'm indoors because my future is so bright.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are in Las Vegas. Go Raiders, baby!
Oh, my God. Michael Irvin, I have to imagine you've enjoyed a time or two in Las Vegas before.
Let me ask you all a question. Let me ask you guys a question now. Did you broadcast live from L.A. when they played the Rams?
No, we did not. No.
Soon as you saw Vegas, you're in out there. And I said, oh my God.
The owner of Circa, Derek Stevens.
Thanks a lot, guys. And I think we're going to have a lot of drinks this weekend, so get ready, baby.
My man. Olin Kreutz.
I love myself some Vegas now, so you guys enjoy yourself.
Man, it is so cool to see so many scoreheads here.
This has been awesome.
And Chicagoans just everywhere.
I'm just happy that Shane made it to the broadcast.
It was nice to see Shane here.
So where's Paul Wall?
Getting his grill fitted.
Former Bear from 02 to 06. Who's on the Super Bowl team, Steve Edwards.
Man, it's great right now, man. I just landed.
Yeah, and you came right here to Stadium Swim in Cabana 6.
I listen to you guys all the time. I mean, I was always known as the guy that listened to the score, even when I played. And players used to be like, how do you do that? I'm a Chicago guy.
Mark Potash.
I'm having a major case of sensory overload right now.
Oh, my God.
You almost forget how to not look, you know, when you're my age.
If you are in Chicago and you are ever going to go to Vegas again, Circa Resort and Casino, Stadium Swim, world's largest sports book, the pool, the sports book, it's absolutely unbelievable.
Whatever happens here may as well never have happened at all, because this circle's about as far as it's ever going to go. In other words, forget everything. Good or bad, we don't remember, so we got nothing to talk about. Nothing, guys, nothing. Through a night we'll never remember, but the four of us will never forget.
One, two, three.
And here we go, Tim. Here we go. Here we go, Tim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Epic time in Las Vegas. Was just doing the calculations during the commercial break. The Bloody Mary Bar started at 9 a.m. Vegas time. We were in the hotel rooms, I think all of us by 11 p.m. Shane a little bit earlier than Speaks and I. We kept playing, and that sounds early but for Vegas, but we were up at 4:30 this morning to catch our 6:20, 6:30 flight. But so then I was playing blackjack before the Bloody Mary Bar. So my first cocktail yesterday was at 8:30 in the morning, and I'd say my last beer was at 10:30 at night. So that's a solid 14 hours of drinking in a sports book next to a chain smoker. And that was the fourth day of Vegas.
And the chain smokers, too. They were both there.
They were there, which was surprising. And I felt better, is I guess what I'm saying.
Mark Grody, your thoughts on a day like that?
Yeah.
Sobriety ain't so uncool after all.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, clear-headed Grody over there.
Gentlemen, going on 3 years over here. That's... Well, you guys are going on, what, 12 hours? So,
yeah.
Somebody's a little bit better than, I don't miss those kind of things. Yeah. I did. I had a counselor of mine used to say, like, the elixir for all things in life was, oh, you want to get better at that? You want to do sobriety. And he would whisper it. He was like, you want to do your job better? You want to get outside and you want to make a lot? Sobriety. It's all about sobriety.
Mm.
So there it is, guys.
I'm going to take that under advisement.
Yeah. All right, so I will merge these worlds of a man who drank for 14 hours and a man who's been sober for 3 years by telling you, Grody, that the Bloody Mary menu yesterday was all Bears related and specifically curated by a local who is now the director of beverage over at Circa. Here were the Bloody Marys. Number one, the Koch, a bacon flavored bloody.
Hold on.
That would make Koch Ditka proud.
The Mongo.
Yep. The Mongo Habanero.
Oh, 76.
Hard hitting Habanero Bloody Mary.
Oh, my God.
And that seemed to be delicious. And then the Soldier Field's a cucumber Bloody Mary, as cool as the rookie quarterback.
Oh my God!
How about Sam from Oak Park pulling that with the three bloodies, and they were delicious.
That sounds absolutely deluxe. I actually said this to somebody yesterday. I could not go. I would ruin my sobriety in Vegas. There's no doubt. I am not equipped to go to Las Vegas and not drink because I don't gamble enough. So I love the whole scene. I love the free drinks and hanging out and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean,
I think one thing makes you gamble, and then the gambling makes you drink, and then
it's
the drinking
cyclical.
Makes you gamble.
Oh, right. And then
explain me sitting down at the blackjack table at 8:30 in the morning, then, because I was stone sober when I did that. And then the cocktails started showing up. God, it's the greatest place. When can we go back? When can we go back to Vegas, Shane? Do we have anything on the books?
No, we don't, Danny.
Okay, well, let's... We should.
Are you guys doing the Score House thingamajigger in February or whatever?
I hope so. March, I guess.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's the plan.
I don't know if I ever wanted to leave...
Score House!
If I ever wanted to leave any place more than I wanted to leave Las Vegas this morning. And then by this time of day... Yeah, I'd go back. I'd be interested in going
back. I want to have the next trip planned, but I also wanted to leave Vegas.
Desperately.
Right? Those two things can coexist.
And then you wanted...
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, then you wanted to host a four-hour radio show.
Yeah.
Bad idiot move for Mitch putting us on a 6:30 flight. Just send us out on the 11:55.
Last night?
On the red eye?
Yeah.
I agree.
I disagree. Well...
Then you could have slept for 6-7 hours before you had to come in here.
But we would have missed the end of the White Sox game and the end of the Sunday Night Football
game. No, we wouldn't have. 11:55 out of Vegas?
Yeah, the game was done by like 10 Vegas time.
Would have been close.
9:45.
All right, well, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I always say about you.
You know, Mark, yesterday I had the good fortune to be at the game at Allegiant Stadium out there in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I was trying to look for the kind of things that you, I'm sure, look for all the time, trying to look for when you get a chance. And I was far away, obviously, up there in the 100 section, but like towards the top. When Justin Fields gets hit and gets hurt, takes that hit on 3rd and 4 as he walks off, everybody's going to commercial. I'm like, I got an opportunity here.
Absolutely.
I can help. I can do my job and see what I can pick up. Fields is ridiculously tough, isn't it? You've seen evidence of this at the home games that you've been at.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, let's go back even to the preseason game where he took the wallop, the blindside wallop. I don't even remember who's against now, but you guys know the play.
Buffalo.
It was against Buffalo, and he just pops right back up, and he was fine. And when he did take the hits yesterday, and he disrupted the ribs and the knee, and he comes out, and I'm like, there's no way he's going back in. And lo and behold, he does. So, yeah, there is. I'm down with the idea that there is a toughness about him, but there's only so many hits he's going to be able to take. Like, if he keeps taking those kinds of hits, he's gonna get hurt. And I do worry about that.
And let me say this. Very expensive for a backup quarterback, but, boy, I love Andy Dalton backup quarterback.
Andy Dalton backup quarterback is a good backup quarterback. Because I just want to be sure, you know, Spiegel and I were talking yesterday about that, the play call on the 3rd and 5 where they weren't letting Fields throw and they did the designed run. and he didn't like it because, I don't want to characterize it, but you didn't want to expose him to an extra hit if you're not going to let
him
reasons.
Throw it. Two reasons. I merged both my reasons, and really what it comes down to is, if you're going to put him out there in harm's way, give him the opportunity to throw the ball as well and actually end the game, which is what the opportunity called for.
See, I'll go a little bit oppo on that, because I was surprised that Justin Fields was not able to execute that. A guy with that kind of mobility, with that kind of speed, with that kind of elusiveness that we have seen some of, and we obviously saw it when he was at Ohio State, that he was not able to, and he was conflicted when he was shy of the first down marker. That's the kind of play that I would have thought Justin Fields would be able to make, and he didn't. So that's one of those things that I was talking before 5 o'clock about him. Just so far, he's going to be really good at running. He's a little clunky in that regard right now. So I was more surprised that he didn't execute that play, to tell you the truth.
And I was as well, but I wanted to see him get an opportunity to win the game with his arm. But this will sound weird. The fact that he's taking some hits doesn't bother me. Like, their tackles suck. He's playing in the NFL. It's not a reason to sit him, the fear of the injury. You know, now, the best case scenario would be that you protect him at all times, and when he runs, he gets out of bounds and slides all the time. And, like, I want him to develop that Russell Wilson, like, where Russell Wilson never seems to take a big hit, where Kyler Murray never seems to take a big hit. Obviously, that is the goal, but it's a learned skill. And so I'm hoping that Justin Fields develops that part of his game and that skill set, because if the alternative is, man, he's taken a few too many hits for my liking, so let's put Andy Dalton back out there to protect Justin Fields. I'm not here for that.
I wouldn't do that. That's not even close to what I'm thinking at this point. I'm thinking that if he keeps taking these, not just hits, like, they're pretty clean shots he's taking from defenders. If multiple hits keep occurring during games, one of these times he's not going to return to the game, and he may miss games, and then you've stunted the whole thing. So I'm not.
But how do you stop that from happening? He's got to learn where the blitz is coming. He's got, you know what I mean? It's learning by experience. How do you avoid it?
Yeah, no, I think that they're doing everything possible to avoid it. The offense is what it is. What, a combined 7 catches between Darnell Mooney and Allen Robinson? The offense is what it is. Mm-hmm. In the name of protecting Justin Fields, we joked about Alex Bars and him being in motion and being a fullback and being a 6th or 7th offensive lineman. They're doing everything they can to avoid exposing Justin Fields in lots of different ways. I'm just saying, in response to you saying, and everybody saying, this guy's so tough, and he is so tough, but all I'm saying is, one of these times, if he keeps taking multiple clean hits, he's going to be injured, and then there's a problem.
Well, here are some of the ways that they can protect him. We talked about Alex Bars and other, you know, blockers on the edge being there to allow my guy Max Protect to be on the field more often than not. Also, first 3 games, they took a total of 40 snaps under center. In these past 2 games, it's 65. Total of 65. So they're putting him back there under center, letting him retreat, seeing the ball, often handed off, because that's working. I mean, I think they only averaged with the running backs like around 4.1 yards per carry, but it felt like 7 or 8, didn't it? Every time they ran it, you felt like you were getting 7 or 8, and often you were doing that. Why was it so good and so effective running the ball?
I think that one of the reasons was just watching, you know, Damian Williams was good too, but watching Khalil Herbert.
That leg drive, man.
The leg, not just the leg drive, but like that ability to follow blocking is sometimes an underrated skill, because sometimes guys want to dance, they want to do their own thing. Khalil Herbert, for better, was playing it conservatively in that regard. Like, okay, this is the blocking scheme. I am going to follow it to a T, and that's what he did. There was like kind of this natural flow to his game, and I've noticed that since he got here, just even when he was returning kicks and everything that they'd asked him to do, he seems to pick things up quickly. And you hear announcers and all of us talk about vision for running backs, and it just seems like something you say. Like, I saw that with Khalil Herbert. The vision was great, knowing who to follow, which hole is open, which way to go. Like, the whole thing was great. And I don't know if he's going to continue to do this. None of us knows it. Like Dave Wanstead famously said about James Allen.
Let's not call putting James Allen in the Hall of Fame.
Right, right. So since that day, I learned not to get too carried away about running backs. But I like what I saw out of him and just the way they worked with the offensive line. It was a great concert.
I want to talk about this idea of identity. Matt Nagy's been saying the word a lot, right? We got to have an identity. We're going to come out of this game with an identity. That was his thing, the Detroit game. We're going to come out of the game with an identity. Identities are not established in one game against Detroit or two games, even if this is an impressive road win when you're a 5.5-point underdog. Bernstein wrote about it. Biggs wrote about it. It's kind of like the story of the moment.
How did you see that Brad Biggs wrote about it, by the way?
I read Brad Biggs' articles, even though I do not follow him on Twitter.
We got to fix that. You shouldn't be
able
to read
those. You don't
follow
him on Twitter?
And I try to. No, I was blocked. But
are you guys being serious? What happened with Biggs?
Oh, my God. This every time. I just read it.
Grody's now playing along. Here.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. You guys all know. Yeah,
I was there. You weren't.
I got blocked, too. All right.
You did, too?
Yeah, I did.
By association?
Uh-huh. Yes. The answer is yes.
Wait. I might be walking on thin ice right now.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful, which is why Mike Mulligan, when he wants to talk about our show with Brad Biggs, now refers to it very obliquely.
Yeah, I don't know where you're at with listening to the old afternoon show.
I think we're pretty sure.
Yeah. We know.
We're pretty sure where Brad's at.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's pretty incredible.
I love it.
But anyway, to me, it is identity of the moment out of necessity. Like, this is some sort of they're transitioning to hopefully what the identity will be in the future. But this is not. Because what worries is overstating it, but worries in a sports sense, because Bears fans are so conditioned to thinking run the football, defense, complimentary, like, and then they're doing it and they're having short-term success. It's not that it is a criticism of this identity, but this identity, you do not want this to be the identity long-term.
I think there's a misunderstanding of what having an identity means. It's like that team needs to be confident and have swagger and be psyched to be doing what they're doing. And they didn't believe that they were any good doing the other stuff. They weren't. Now they believe they're good doing this. Now you can kind of build off. You have created literally a confident identity. So to me, that's what I hear when we talk about it is like, hey, what are we good at? Okay, we're good at this. Okay, great. Then we can build off this and do a ton of other things off the fact that we figured out something we do well.
The irony of it is that when Matt Nagy walked into Hallis Hall in 2018, the idea was finally we're changing the identity of the Bears, and the Bears are moving into the century.
And it was about swagger and confidence, right?
And all these crazy plays that they were going to run, and the downfield passing attack, and elements of a spread offense, and all of that. So
that was a swaggy, confident team yesterday.
It was.
Yeah, but I think so. Yeah, we are talking about two different things, though, because when I see it, it's the stat that you referenced that Biggs wrote about. 37 and 38 carries in back-to-back games only happened twice this century for the Bears. It's Justin four straight games for the Bears with more rushing yards than passing yards. Mm-hmm. That is a crazy thing that you absolutely do not want to become the identity of the team long-term.
Well, and we're going to see in short order like that having to change against the Packers and the Buccaneers because they've been able to, well, I guess, you know, Derek Carr in the Raiders offense has been pretty good, save for their previous game to the Bears. But now you're going to have teams in, you know, with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady who put up lots of points. You are not going to be able to get away necessarily with scoring 16 or 17 or 18 points in a game.
But Danny, to me, this is crawl before you can walk and eventually run. You got to crawl and you got to be able to do the basics and accomplish things and move the ball as best you can. And yes, it's a lower ceiling, but I keep thinking about Brady in for Bledsoe. Brady in for Bledsoe, and who was it? Antoine Smith? Is that who was behind Brady at the time with Belichick?
So. Yeah.
And it was super simple. I want to look at how many passing attempts and how many rushing attempts there were at the time. And obviously, Brady capable of way more. And I'm not comparing Fields to Brady, but you're comparing what sometimes you have to do with a kid who does need some time.
Again, the identity of the moment. The team of the moment, the identity of the moment. This, I just think this game plan, these types of games are not what we should be hoping for, because Justin Fields is capable of more.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we see, like, that touchdown throw to Jesper Horsted, pretty nice. Rolling out, got outside the pocket, cool throw, arm strength.
Would have loved to see a play like that on the third and five late. Roll out, give him an option.
The five pass plays over 20 yards against the Lions, the touchdown to Horsted, the third and 11 conversion to Mooney. Like, it is not as if this kid is not capable. Like, it's a weird thing. I know this will be counterintuitive, but just purely for scouting Justin Fields and the development part, I wouldn't hate it if they got down quick. I'd like to see what it would look like.
Desperation, throw it on every play, Justin Fields.
And I know he's not totally ready for that, and I know that there will be ugly moments, and I'm not trying to rush the entire process. And salting out that win, is a good, impressive road NFL win early in a quarterback's career. And even if he would have thrown the ball seven times, like Mitch Trubisky did in that game when he went 4 for 7, like, there is still development there. So it's not a complaint as much as it's just a cautionary tale of, like, this is not the long-term identity of the Chicago Bears, Justin Fields.
I'm thinking about what Pat Manley's answer to us, Grody, about, like, what it feels like when you're an offensive line and you play like that and you're successful.
Oh, they love blocking for the run.
But the whole team can feed off that feel like they're all confident, swaggery badasses, and that is a good identity to have. Tom Brady's first two starts, 13 of 23, 12 of 24, and then 16 of 20 in the fourth start. The third start, got in a shootout, and he was 33 of 54 in his third start. So, yeah, Fields is going to end up in a game like that, and it might be this weekend.
Might be this weekend against the Packers.
Mm-hmm. Jermaine Effetti told me last week before the Detroit game, after the Detroit game during the week, he said that Matt Nagy came up to the offensive line and basically did okay, this is what you guys want, huh? You want to run the ball? It's on you guys. And, like, the whole offensive line went crazy. And it was almost like the way he told me the story, it was almost like reluctant Matt, like, this is what you guys have been wanting, right?
Yeah.
You better do it now. You got your chance. And they have been terrific in that regard.
Grody, thanks for hanging out, man.
Yep, later, guys.
For another segment. That is our Bears reporter, Mark Grody. I kind of want to take the pulse of where these guys are at, where we're all at heading into game four. The trash talk, who should start game four, the Astros moving up McCullers, who getting the ace at guaranteed rate field. A lot of elements headed into this obviously hugely important elimination game tomorrow. We'll do it coming up on The Score.
Luis Robert, the man at the plate, and of course the winner from Seattle, Kyle Lewis. Nothing in 2 to count.
I wonder what the best ballpark food here at this park is.
What?
That's a weird moment. Bottom of the hour brought to you by DuckDuckGo. It's Parkinson Spiegel on The Score.
That's Adam Wainwright, but didn't Adam Wainwright say delightful stuff about Jose Abreu's pine tar covered helmet, as well as some X's and O's stuff with AJ Pierzynski that people were loving? I was listening to the audio, unfortunately, mostly of a football game. Stupid Vegas.
Stupid Vegas.
Right.
By the way, I just saw this from NFL Research, the NFL branded arm of. Media and research, whatever. That makes no sense.
Want to run that back? one more shot.
Yeah, the NFL's research department.
There we go.
Yeah, thank you.
Love that. You know, it's branded. They got a couple guys sitting at a computer.
Twitter account, by the way, is called NFL Research.
It's verified.
That would have been simplified, wouldn't it?
Yesterday was the longest day of NFL football in the last 50 years.
Yeah.
15 hours.
Like, yeah, baby, yeah.
They all feel like that when I watch football.
Long day of football, yeah, baby.
15 hours and 1 minute from London kickoff to the end of Sunday night football.
Two packs of Marlboros right next to me.
702 points, 10,512 yards, 80 touchdowns, 11 missed field goals, 11 missed point after attempts, 5 games decided in the final 3 minutes of regulation or in overtime. We took the whole thing in, Shane.
No safeties in there or what?
No safeties.
Get
him
up.
Yesterday.
Get them up.
We didn't miss a thing. That's our marathon. People out here praising the Boston Marathon, Chicago Marathon back to back.
Did you see the woman who did that? She ran 2:46 at the Chicago Marathon yesterday, and she ran 2:40 at the Boston Marathon today.
Yeah, I'd like to see her drink for 14 hours in a sports book on the longest day of the NFL season, then make a 6 a.m. flight the next day and not take off work.
You want to impress me? Yeah.
That's my marathon. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the White Sox.
Yeah, here. How did that even happen?
How did that the NFL research bit that we just did for 40 seconds even happen?
I bitched about the fact that I couldn't hear the sound of the baseball game last night because the stupid NFL. And then Danny thought that meant let's talk football.
Yeah, it didn't.
Then go ahead. I'll go home. I'll catch an Uber. You guys talk about your beloved baseball. I'll get out. Of here.
Don't tease us like this, man.
No, don't do it. Who would you guys start tomorrow? Let's go around the room. Carlos Rodon or Lance Lynn? I know they're starting Rodon. You say you would start Lance Lynn.
Yeah, I liked that idea of going with Lynn at home and then having Rodon, having your best swing and miss guys ready for game five. I think you can win with Lance Lynn at home. But it looks like Tony's going to go with Carlos, and he's going to have Lynn backing him up in the Michael Kopech-esque long relief role. That's the plan there. But I very much like the idea of Lynn on normal rest at home.
Danny?
I like Carlos Rodon in this game because you would hate to have your season eliminated with Lance Lynn out there. You know what the track record against Houston is like, just in his career, not even just this season, but you'd hate to be eliminated and say to yourself, man, I wonder what Carlos had left in the tank. We'll never know. And then he signs somewhere else, and you just never know what you have there. So I think you'd have him on a very short leash, maybe even if you wanted to piggyback him with Lance Lynn if he goes, you know, three innings or so. But
if you don't want to start Lynn, do you even want to see Lynn? Like, and maybe Lance would understand. Lance is one of those guys who would get it. Lance, this matchup just sucks, man. They got you for some reason. I can't do it.
Well, the big Achilles heel in this series so far has been the walks. I think they've issued 13 walks to the Astros, and Lynn can provide some stability there by just not giving people the free pass in the middle of a ball game. So I think he could eat some innings up there. And if you're not going to have Kopech, as Tony La Russa alluded to earlier today, that he's not going to be available tomorrow, which I don't know about that. If he's got to throw one inning, I think maybe he would do that. But if you need some innings there in the middle of the game and you don't want to use Ronaldo Lopez, then I like Lynn in that aspect.
Shane, who are you starting?
So I've been thinking about it for a while. I know I would start a pitcher as opposed to somebody else.
Okay.
I like where this is going.
You're qualified for the job.
Yeah, this is going well.
To like better talking baseball. Player. Mm-hmm. I would go with a pitcher. Mm-hmm. Thanks for the courtesy laugh on that. I would go with Rodon for the same reason that it's, if you're not going to go Giolito, if Giolito's not ready to throw tomorrow, then I go Rodon. And then have Kopech right there because Kopech's ready. Like, Kopech can throw 50 pitches and then come back 2 days later. Come on.
Apparently not.
Well,
47 of the day off.
I've talked to him. He's ready to go.
Well, here's the good news. If you can get 4 innings or 5 innings out of Carlos Rodon, you've got everybody else. You don't need to go to Lance Lynn. Like, if he gets it in his head that he's going to go to Lance Lynn to back up Rodon, if Rodon goes 4 or 5, I wouldn't bother to go to Lance Lynn. I mean, well, maybe 4. But if it's 5, go to Pera. Go to Pera. Know that you've got Hendricks for 2 innings on the back end. So it'll be interesting.
I don't think Lance Lynn has earned it. Like, I don't think he has earned this start against the Astros with the change. He was amazing this season. Like you said, bad matchup. The plan was clearly Rodon. And if he lasts an inning or two, then Lance Lynn can come in, all hands on deck in an elimination game.
And Lynn's been a reliever many times in his life. He'll be comfortable doing that.
So, you know, in a desperation spot or if Rodon falters, but what was it about game one that suggests Lance Lynn deserves to bump Rodon in game four? And even more so, I know they won't announce it yet because there's no need to, and there's been gamesmanship the whole series, but Giolito is a lock for 5, isn't he? They're not going back to Lance Lynn game 5 in Houston.
You can't go to Houston for a game 5 and start Lynn. No, it would be Giolito with Kopech backing him up, and it'd be short. It'd be nice to have Rodon there too, but that would be, it'd be excess to have all of that. So maybe Rodon will be freaking great. You know,
sure.
He's been such a stud. It's been a great season. He has shown the ability to adjust to whatever he has. He has shown the ability to save extra heat on the fastball for bigger innings. So he seems to have control over that. He's been so good. So, boy, it'd be fun to see him be great tomorrow.
Yeah. It would be amazing. Did any of you guys have a problem with what Tapera said about the Astros? Bringing it up down to one, the idea of waking a sleeping giant, bulletin board material. Like, I have no dog in the fight, and so I like the entertainment value of it, think it's funny, and add some edge to the series. But I could easily see the fatalistic nature of a White Sox fan saying, yo, what the hell? We just scored 12 runs, had an offensive explosion. Mm. Well, What? Why?
You got to be more confident than them. So if that's helping them have the edge, that edge, then that's healthy and that's good. One thing I don't want is to go back to Houston in Game 5 and have Tepera and others think, oh, boy, we're in trouble now because this is where they cheat, and then worry about all that stuff. But everybody's motivated here. I don't think motivation and bulletin board stuff is going to change the way the Astros prep.
It surprised me.
Yeah, it surprised me too, but, you know, I find the Astros to be incredibly unlikable, and I think it's the thing that's hovering over this every time you watch them for the past 3 years or whatever it is.
It's like, a begrudging respect.
Yeah, and we know they have talent there, but you just know everything that they've achieved the past few years is built on a lie, and who knows how many other teams are doing it, but I wonder if that is the general tone salute of what other players are across the league feel, and they just haven't said, and now Tepera's in a spot where he feels like he can say that. I don't know if they're armed with new information or whatever, or if it's just pure head games that they're trying to play. You know, whatever it is, like, I have no problem with him saying it. They're not a sleeping giant. They're already a giant. They've already been kicking your teeth in this series. You won only one game, so whatever they feel like they have to do to have that edge, and Tepera can say it because he's been outstanding ever since he got here.
He's been amazing.
Yeah, so.
But a surprising messenger, though, right? Like, on this team, of all the guys that you would think would maybe talk trash for the White Sox against the Astros, kind of surprising that it's him.
No, he's on the board, him and Hendricks. Tepera will tell you the truth. Tepera has told the truth about Kimbrel at different times on different teams.
Maybe he's speaking for – I'm not, like, dropping, you know, hints here because I know something or whatever, but maybe he's speaking for someone else in that bullpen who feels like they can't say something. You know, like, maybe there is something going on and they all know it, but
– maybe someone got roughed up and one of his teammates is like, damn, man, how did they hit that slider? And so he comes out. That's interesting. It's a good theory. I don't know. I don't think that stuff, like, try harder, bulletin board material. Like, you know me. I think it just makes sports more interesting. But it was making that a story after your win was just a surprise to me. Of all of the things, I did not expect to see that storyline come up in the middle of the series.
I think he just said the quiet part loud, that everybody around the league is, like, thinking this stuff about them, whether it's true or not. And the thing is, numbers have gone around today debunking it, like team OPS, home and road, swing and miss rate, home and road for the Astros. It's actually very, very even, so it does not support the fact that they're better at home. They're just really, really good.
And then I completely get why Dusty is moving McCullers up, right? You get to start your best pitcher
for sure
on normal rest to try to close out the series. But it's – you want to give the White Sox a ton of confidence heading back into Houston.
Oh, you beat McCullers?
And you get to do it at home with your crowd. Like, obviously, you have more edge against McCullers in Chicago than in Houston. So you draw blood on him early. That is going to obviously they're already a 10 out of 10 confident team, but it's just going to be through the absolute roof if they can draw blood on that dude early.
Man, this is fun stuff.
And that puts all the pressures on the home team in a game 5. So now you have what? You're going to go.
Right, you burn McCullers. That's it's a little risky.
You go, even though
I do think every manager in baseball would do it. Like, I don't think a single team would skip by far their best starter on normal rest because you don't want to go to the coin flip of game 5. Like, I think it is a conventional move that Dusty is making, but it does add an element of pressure.
Well, unless you get in your head and you're like, no, I'm going to save McCullers for game 1 of the ALCS.
Right, but that's
some managers have done that, you know, and they will rue the day of doing that when it's so clear like this, the 1-4. This is end the series right away.
The best arm I saw this series, other than McCullers, was the guy they threw out there last night, Javier. Like, what happened? That guy's burned for me, you know, but maybe not with the off day now, but that's the best arm that I've seen out of that bullpen.
He got 8 outs for them when they really, really needed it, but now he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking
name, too. Stupid name. Javier is the last name.
You know, like,
never catch me with that last name.
You know, because your last name is Reardon.
Yeah, you already got one.
I would never change it to Javier.
Makes sense.
just put it out there.
It's good talk.
That's totally reasonable. Wouldn't you think that more teams that maybe would do what you're talking about, like they would have like a 1 and a 2 that are closer to each other? Whereas for this, it's like McCullers is by far the Astros' best option.
It's because Zach Greinke is a bullpen guy now, man.
And a hittable one.
A very hittable bullpen guy. And it's so, yeah, they're in a weird spot. You have, you've reached, and it's too bad on that level that it got rained out because you've reached the very gettable part of the Astros in terms of depth of starters, like Jose Urquidy, okay, bring it. You know, Garcia to Garcia last night, okay, yeah, good arms, but yeah, bring it without having the fear of God in those guys.
Yeah, so today, I thought you were saying that to the off day, the rainout helped the Sox, but that was only if they were going to go to Lance
Lynn. If they're going to do that plan.
If they're going to go to Rodon, it probably helps the Astros, right?
Well, because it helps the Astros because it lets them throw McCullers a second time for sure.
I think it still helps the Sox because Tapera went two innings yesterday. He hadn't done that since June. And you had Bummer went an inning and two thirds. So I think those are your two most dynamic weapons right now, your most effective guys other than Hendricks. Like, and Hendricks pitched as well, so you get
and you were
going
to see McCullers either way.
Exactly. So you boil it down to the most simplified version is a rainout helps the White Sox because they can face McCullers at home as opposed to in Houston. Boom. That's it.
And if you really need an inning from Kopech to close it out, you know, let's say you got to go to that bullpen early because Rodon doesn't give you much. Like he gives you some production but doesn't give you length in innings. I think you can go with Kopech later on in that ball game and feel a little bit better about it for one inning.
Hey, man, this is fun stuff because you'll have Cease available too in an absolute pinch. I know the wildness freaks you out, but that might be the best swing and miss stuff, even better than Kopech and even better than Rodon, purely stuff wise on this team. So having him in your back pocket for a game five could be nice.
I love this part of baseball.
This is great.
This is the stuff that genuinely interests me. All right, let's just get to the playoff.
This is how you Bumgarner your way through a postseason, or how Clayton Kershaw shows up in a game five against the Nationals and finishes out. And this is it's when it's truly, truly great and unique.
We will put a bow on this thing. Parkinson Spiegel on the score.
Fields, rush coming. Connection with Komet. First down into Raiders territory. Matt Nagy, when we asked him about Fields, he said highly competitive. He cares a lot. He wants to be coached hard, doesn't want to be babied. He might be stoic in the moment, but there's a confidence. It's in his DNA.
What a beautiful throw, too. May I tag that?
Please.
I talked with a Bears coach. I'm not going to identify him just in case. You know what he said to all that you just said? Stone cold killer.
Guy's got confidence, he's got swagger, he's got toughness. Awesome to see, man. It's all about the hope. Because it's not that impressive of a game line. We know he's not a finished product, but that throw to Mooney on 3rd and 12, the touchdown throw to Horsted, who was covered, that required arm strength and mobility and confidence to even make the throw, given that it wasn't wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Plus those intangibles and the things that he's flashed and the resiliency coming back from that beatdown he took in Cleveland, getting knocked out of that game, then coming back in, finishing strong, getting a road win, starting to come together.
Learning. Yeah. As they win, which is a nice little sidelight, and the team gains confidence and such. Can't wait tomorrow. We'll have to talk about the stadium a little bit tomorrow. Was at the game, 50% Bears fans is totally within play. At least 40 at a minimum. And when the Raiders were done in the final 2 minutes and all their fans were bailing, the Bears fans being left there, I was like, oh my God, look at this. And there's lots of reasons why, and we knew this was going to be kind of the case leading in, but to that extent was epic, man. And like, you know, with like Bears going for a big fourth down stop, let's go Raiders was drowned out by let's go Bears very quickly and directly.
The videos of, you know, Bear Down and Green Bay Sucks and all that, like, of the fans like walking out of the stadium after the game celebrating, was just, it was there. And I mean, it's a combination, and we talked about it, but I'm very interested in going through tomorrow what parts of Allegiant Stadium you would want at the Bears' new spot in Arlington Heights.
Soldier Field Northwest.
And which ones you wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll do that tomorrow. We'll obviously be opposite the Sox game. Shane, you're going to the Sox game? Has your dad reconsidered and taken you up on the offer to go?
He's going
to
call me tonight because we still have to coordinate dropping my dog off with me, because I dropped her off with them when we went to Vegas. So
yeah.
I'm going to pressure him tomorrow morning when he drops Willie off.
Okay.
What's your backup? What's your backup plan?
I don't know. Probably my sister. I've got friends that I could go with, but I'd rather go with my dad or sister.
I thought there was a loose plan to go with Tanny at some point here along the way. Tanny, are you going to be able to go?
Yeah, there was a loose plan yesterday to go today. Had there been a game today?
Yeah.
And then that plans change. You know how it goes sometimes.
That was another. We can expose him. That was another issue. My dad.
I wasn't sure if we were allowed to talk about this.
We can talk about that. He's a P1. He's probably listening, that jackass. So I texted him early yesterday. The plan was always he and I to go together. And then he said he couldn't go anymore.
Here we go, Jim.
And I said, okay, I'm going to ask Tanny. and asked Tanny, and then my dad texted
And Tanny said yes, and you guys were both going to miss today's show
and we were
to
feeling,
go to the game.
We were feeling so generous, like just benevolent, wonderful hosts allowing our producers to go, and we missed out on that kind of
And that's what changed
feelings.
My mind about going. I was like, you know what? I don't want to feel like I owe anyone anything, so there's no way I'm going to this game.
Really?
But you did not have the choice. The choice was taken away
taken
from
away
you.
By the P1 jackass.
Because Shane's dad.
Yeah, so here's
like,
the,
oh, yeah.
Here's a text from my dad. This is his response. Shane, as sorry as I am, I will most likely not be able to go tomorrow. This is in reference to today's game.
What I hear is I don't love you. That's what I hear.
My CBRE bosses are in for us winning the world. I don't know what that means. I said, all right. He said, I'm so sorry, Shane. And then I texted Tanny right away. Tanny, my dad can't go. Do you want to go? And he said, well, of course I do. So Tanny was going to go. My dad, yesterday, 11:24 p.m. Hey, still have the ticket? I said, I offered to Tanny, but I guess I could tell him no.
I hear, I do
can't
love
do
you.
That to him.
I do love you.
I don't want problems with Tanny.
That's what your dad said?
Yeah, I can't do that to him. I don't want problems with Tanny.
But you wanted to take your dad.
And then my mom jumped in, and she's like, Shane, he's your father.
I was going to say.
Yeah, my mom jumped in the group text.
Because when we ended yesterday, or when last I heard about this, you were going to take Tanny, and then something changed.
And
it was your mom.
And no, Shane and I went to dinner, and I was like, because you were like, no, you can't do that to Tanny. And then we went to dinner, and I was like, dude, Tanny would understand. It's your dad. Like, and Shane was like, because I really want to have this moment with my dad. I want to have it for my dad to take him and pay for the ticket. He's like, I hope I'm not betraying a cabinet. But you were like, I really want to take my dad. And it's not about not wanting to take Tanny.
Exactly.
It's about wanting to take your dad.
We need Tanny to take his dad tomorrow. Can we arrange that?
Well, I still want to use my tickets. He can't have mine.
Oh, yeah.
The message from Shane last night, very long, drawn. I'm so sorry, man. Blah, blah, blah. I'm in the middle of doing Sox posts. I'm like, I don't care. It's your dad. It's fine.
Yeah, it's your dad. Of course.
See?
Of course.
I love when Shanny gets along.
It's healthy. We always get along. It's you guys.
Oh, yeah, we're the problem.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's true.
Thank you to Boomer Esiason. Thank you to the Kane guy. Thank you to Pat Manley. Thank you to Mark Grody. They were our guests on the show today. Thank you to Connor O'Donnell. He runs the Twitch chat and the video stream. Thank you to Joe Stonecrab for our victory chicken.
Yes.
It's the hidden gem on the menu. They do large catering. Take it to your tailgate. It is incredible. Obviously, the Stonecrab, the steak, the desserts, the whole thing. The fried chicken is absolutely amazing. So be sure to hit up Joe's as we do every Bears victory Monday. Shane Reardon is just the phone guy around here. Thank you, sir. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkins. I'm going to bed. We are Parkins Spiegel. This is The Score.
Well, I would say it was fine.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.